This is Brigadoon. A woman in long skirts runs up a hill with dark blonde hair pulled back and tied with ribbon. She reaches the crest and gazes down. She runs along a path into a green valley. Brigadoon. Starring Robert Goulet, Peter Falk, Sally Ann Howes, co-starring Finley Curry, Edward Villella. Marilyn Mason is Meg. Book and lyrics by Alan J. Lerner. Music by Frederick Lowe. Adapted for television by Ernest Kinoy. Executive producer, Norman Rosemont. Produced and directed by Fielder Cook. Against a blue sky framed by green tree branches, the woman walks over another hill. She sings,
"Waiting for my dearie, and happy am I to hold my heart till he comes strolling by. When he comes, my dearie, one look and I'll know that he's the dearie I've been wanting so."
She stops, gazing around.
"Though I live what life till the day he arrives, I'll not ever, ever grieve. For my hope will be high that he'll come strolling by. For you see, I believe that there's a laddie weary."
She walks on.
"And wandering free, who's waiting for his dearie."
Elsewhere in the hills.
"Well, we took the high road. Da, 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 da. Hey, Tommy. And you took the low road."
Tommy turns from the vista to approach the other man bent over a rally car with its hood up.
"And we'll get nowhere for you."
The man closes the hood.
"For all I know, there's a thistle in the differential.
I think your fuel line is clogged. I'm going to look at that map again."
"Boy, am I glad we took the scenic route, because I wouldn't miss this for worlds. You know, if we miss the boat, we're out 20 pounds entrance money in Dublin."
"Yeah, well, Auchentoo's over there, right?"
"As I remember that, that should be on the right. And, I don't remember."
"And Braymore's on the left."
"Wonder what's in the middle?"
"Nothing."
"That's where we are."
He opens a flask.
"Little scotch? It's domestic, but I can't afford the import."
He sips.
"I thought you told me you were going to cut down on that stuff."
"I did. But I'm a terrible liar. And besides, it doesn't pay. You know, one time I was going with a wonderful girl, and she kept pleading with me to give it up. And finally, I did. Then we discovered we had nothing more to talk about, and we broke up."
Chuckling, Tommy steps away and gets a rag from the car to wipe his hands.
"Know something, Jeff?"
He throws the rag back in and leans on the car.
"Ever since I came up into these hills, I have a strange feeling that I've been looking for something."
"Yeah, the way out of these hills. You know, if we're really busted, you can always cable home for money."
"Yeah, we went all through that in Monte Carlo."
"I know. I just thought that in Scotland, maybe your attitude toward money might change."
"Sure you did.
Look, what's the point of being engaged to a detergent heiress if you can't sponge a little?
Forget it, Jeff.
Tom, do you know that you've postponed going home to marry that girl 3 times?
Yeah, I know.
What are you looking for?
I don't know.
I've noticed. You've been drifting. And just let me say this, buddy.
Jeff puts an arm on his shoulder.
Going around an S-curve in Monaco at 140 miles an hour. Well, that just ain't no time to ponder the verities of life.
You don't believe in anything, do you?
Oh, yes, I do. I believe in anything that's real. Anything I can understand. Anything I can touch or taste, smell, see, hear, and swallow.
And what about something you don't understand?
I drown it.
Yeah. And that's where I envy you.
He sips again.
Why?
Because you just sort of grab at life and you run.
Like a thief. You see, Tommy, basically you're an idealist.
Jeff sits behind the wheel.
You've got both feet planted firmly in midair, which is all right, except...
He honks the horn, heard by the woman. In her old-fashioned peasant dress, she walks forward toward the sound and spots the men in the car down the hill. She watches them curiously. Jeff spots her.
Tommy.
And stands.
There's a girl.
Tommy turns, looking up.
Hey, miss. Are you jealous where we are?
Nervous, she turns away.
Miss.
And runs off. Tommy and Jeff run up the hill after her. They stop at the top.
Wait a minute.
Starting down the other side, Tommy pushes clear some tall weeds. Then Jeff joins him.
Where'd she go?
Down there, towards our village.
What village? There's nothing on the map.
Well, it's there, Jeff. Maybe there's a garage.
He heads down.
Garage? There's not even a TV antenna.
Reluctantly, Jeff follows him. In the village, women in long skirts and bonnets and men in kilts and tam o'shanters walk the narrow streets, going about their lives. They all sing. Three men consider a large ladle. On the edge of the village is a small stone bridge. The woman Tommy and Jeff saw rushes over it, greeted by some townspeople. She slows to a normal pace, walking through the village. She shakes an older man's hand and curtsies to him, then moves on. Jeff and Tommy walk over the bridge in their slim trousers, muted color shirts, and casual jackets. Townspeople stare at them as they walk through the village. The two men glance about, stepping around a corner.
Jeff, why don't you get on this way and see if you can find a place to make a call?
You got 2 pennies for the phone?
Yeah, don't forget the fresh button feet.
They go their separate ways. A young man sits reading. Still being gawked at, Tommy approaches him from behind.
Excuse me, but could you tell me where I am?
Hi.
He keeps reading.
Well, would you?
Brigadoon.
Brigadoon.
I said, plain.
Tommy looks at his map.
What the heck is Brigadoon? It's not on the map.
Aye.
You know it's not on the map.
Aye.
Why not?
Because a man can read his book in peace without a clack of loose tongues.
He stalks off. Meanwhile, on Jeff's route...
I'm selling a bit of milk and cream. Tipper than me will know. Cause this is the finest milk and cream that ever came out to cow.
He follows.
The finest it is, the price is small. With milk and the cream alack. There's nothing to do but sell it all. The cow will not take it back.
Pardon me, miss, but I'm looking
for... Now, here's the bra lady for fair. Whatever it is you desire, you better put a name to it.
She sets down her milk pails.
Well, in that case,
Milk, cream, a farthing, a noggin.
You know, I don't think I have a farthing.
Oh. Well, my father says I cannot give credit, but I could be coaxed.
Yes, I kind of get that feeling. Miss...
My name's Meg Brocky, and I'm unmarried.
Lovely.
I'm working up to it gradual.
Tell me, Meg Brocky, what's everybody all dressed up for?
Look, lady, we're not dressed up. Nothing till tonight for the wedding. And wait till you see me in my dimity bodice.
Yeah, I got a feeling that your bodice is going to be more dimity than anybody else's.
Tommy approaches.
Unfortunately, we're not going to be here.
Oh.
How'd you make out?
I didn't exactly make any friends.
You went street. This is Meg Brocky, and she's unmarried.
Well, that's nice. Miss Brocky, is there anyone in charge around here? A constable, someone like that?
Aye, McLaren's constable. You'll find him in the square posting the bonds.
The what?
The bonds. Did I not tell you there's the wedding? Charlie Dalrymple and Jeannie McLaren. They'll be posting the bonds the new.
In the square, townspeople, including the dark blonde woman, watch an old man post a document to a house door.
There are the bonds of postage. As Mr. Forsyth would have done had he been worse on this, the second day of our blessing. The good man.
He steps to a man between the woman and another.
McLaren. It's a wise father. Gives a sigh of relief from the day when his wee lass becomes the wife of a good man. Congratulations, Andrew. And you, Jean.
The other woman hugs him.
Hey, hey, you may keep that for your man, all right?
Ah, there's plenty more.
Jeannie. You'll keep a decent tongue in your head before the dominie.
Oh, losh, Andrew, there's no harm in taking joy in the way of a man with a maid. As a matter of fact, when I look at your two beautiful daughters, I wish I was 70 again.
He hugs Jeannie again.
Ah, 'tis a fearful thing to be the father of daughters, for you have all the risks of a shepherd keeping his lambs from the wolves. And when the time comes for shearing, 'tis another man gets the fleece.
Oh, come now, Andrew. Didn't he try to be doer on this a day of gladness? It's no in the nature of a man.
Oh, I'm a very happy man. Now come, Mr. Lundy. Will you not join me at all Lecky's for a wee nip to celebrate this fair day?
The men walk off together.
I'll be pleased to rejoice with
Andrew you. Turns back to the first woman.
Fiona! You'll be certain to buy everything that's needed for your sister's wedding supper.
Aye, I will, Father.
Remember, just what's needed, no more. My aim is to be hospitable, not philanthropic. Come, Mr. Lundy.
They continue on.
He's a lucky lad, that Charlie Dorano. Your Jeannie's a good maiden.
Ah, all maidens are good. So then, tell me, where all the bad wives come from?
I've often thought of that myself.
The man who'd been reading steps around a corner and stops, staring at Jeannie. He starts to the house, but turns to Fiona.
Fiona?
They look at the man.
Oh, watch, Jeannie. You're not going over there.
I must speak to Harry, Fiona. I feel so sorry for him.
Oh, 'tis no mercy you're doing. Now, you made your choice. Leave the poor laddie alone.
But she goes on to him, and Fiona follows.
Harry?
Well, then.
How are you today?
How should I be on your wedding day?
I'm truly sorry, Harry.
How do you know? Charlie Dalrymple is to have it all. His fine clothes and his university degree. And all you.
Oh, there are other lasses, Harry.
No, no. There's none in Brigadoon for me. Just as there's no lad in this town for you. You'll die an old maid, Fiona McLaren.
Aye, more than likely, Harry Beaton, for I'm 24 already. But I'll abide it.
Well, I can abide. What can anyone do but hate when you realize your life didn't mean a damn? I cannot leave here. I cannot go to the university to make something of myself. And I cannot have Jeannie. So there's nothing to do but hate everything and everybody in this cursed town.
Oh, Harry, take my hand for long syne. Wish me happiness.
But he turns away and runs, bumping into Jeff.
Excuse me, Matt.
Take your hands off me, you sulking gilly.
He runs away.
Sulking gilly?
Ahead of him, watched by Meg, Tommy stops.
Hey, Jeff.
He catches up to him.
What?
There she is, the girl.
What girl?
Tommy walks ahead while Meg catches up to Jeff, sharing a look with him. As Fiona and Jeannie part.
Miss!
Fiona turns.
Forgive me, don't run away again. I did see you on the hill this morning, didn't I?
Fiona, you know you're not to go out of Brigadoon.
Oh, Jeannie, I just took a bit of a walk.
Forgive me, but do you have a phone in the house?
A phone?
Yes, you know, miss. A phone?
Jeff gestures one.
Do you play on it?
They glance at Meg.
Well, you see, we've been driving all night, and we're kind of...
Oh, you poor laddie. You must be tired. Oh, and think of your poor horse.
Yeah, well, right now, our poor horse has got dirt in his carburetor. Tom, I don't know what's going on around here, but everybody is staring at us like we just shot Mary Queen of Scots.
I'm sorry, sir. We didn't mean to offend. It's just that, well, you see, people didn't come here very often. And your clothes, well, they're that queer.
Oh, they're too far out.
But you must be tired and hungry. There's a wee tavern at the end of the street where you can get a sup and a dram.
Whatever it is, It sounds marvelous.
Come on.
Meg pulls Jeff aside.
I'll show you the way.
Easy, kid. Remember, you're working up to it gradually.
A man picks up Jeannie.
Shani!
He spins her around.
Mind your manners.
Well, now, if a bridegroom cannot be kissed on his wedding morn, when then?
Charlie, there are strangers.
He carries her to the others.
Charlie Dalrymple, your servant.
How do you do?
And this is my Bonnie Jean.
Charlie.
He spins her and sets her down.
You know you're not to set your eyes on the bride before the wedding.
I know. But my eyes were closed the entire time.
Charlie.
Jeannie, may God bless me this morning. As much as I would bless him, if I were he, and he were Charles Dalrymple.
She blows him a kiss and steps into the house.
No, Galatza, come drink with me to my last hours of freedom.
Oh, Charlie.
I think that's a grand idea, Mr. Dalrymple.
Now, it's Charlie to all men on my wedding day, and you.
I'm Jeff Douglas, this is Tommy Albright.
It's very nice of you, Charlie, but we've got to find a phone.
A phone?
It's a musical instrument. And Charlie, I didn't see why you...
Fiona, tis a custom in Brigadoon to buy all strangers a bumper on your wedding day. And I didn't think I'd find you to drink with since the miracle. So...
Since the what?
It's just a step to Old Lucky's whiskey
shop. Wait a minute, what did you say about a miracle?
Did I say that? Well, now, I must have met my wedding. Now, that's a miracle. Charlie Dalrymple settling on one lass.
You mean you were a swinger, right, Charlie?
Aye, if I catch your meaning.
He sings.
I used to be a robin.
He takes Jeff and Tommy by the arms and they head down the road.
On any lass I'd drum, who would try to tie me down?
They stop.
But then one day I met a mate who held out her hand and I stayed and stayed. And now across the green, I'll go home with Bonnie Jean.
They go on. Jeff and Tommy hop as they follow Charlie, who sings to the other village men.
Aberdeen I used to know, a lass with an air, and her name was Jo. And every night at 10, I would meet her in the glen. But now I'll not see her again, especially not in the glen at 10. For now across the green,
Jeff beckons the other men to join him with Tommy and Charlie in a tavern, where tankards are poured. Two men carry Charlie and set him on the bar, where he stands and toasts. They all drink deeply, and Charlie wipes his mouth with his sleeve. He jumps down from the bar. A few men dance. And Jeff walks past them to Charlie.
I'll go home with Bonnie Jean.
Meg is swung around. A man picks her up and spins her. Then sets her down to turn to Charlie.
Hello to married men I've known. I'll soon have a wife and leave yours alone.
She gazes at Jeff beside him.
A Bonnie wife indeed. She's all I'll ever need.
She licks her lips.
With Bonnie Jean, my days will fly. And love her I will till the day I die. That's why across the green,
Charlie locks arms with Jeff, and so does Meg. Jeff keeps drinking. The men carry Charlie again and put him on a blanket held by several other men. They toss him in the air over and over. Later, Fiona collects laundry drying on hedges outside the McLaren house. She turns to Tommy, startled.
Oh, it's you.
She moves on to a bench, where she picks up a couple more things. Then carries her laundry basket past Tommy and turns.
I thought
thought you were drinking Charlie's health.
Oh, I don't think Charlie's health needs my drinking. He's rather an enthusiastic bridegroom.
He lays out more to dry.
Is that so strange?
Yeah, let me.
He holds the basket.
No, it's just that, well, I'm getting married next month, and I managed to contain my exuberance.
You're getting married?
Yes. Yes, to a soap heiress.
Well, I think it's very important for a wife to be able to make good soap. I'm sure you'll be very happy.
Well, I'm not.
Then why did you ask her to marry ye?
I don't know. I think there was a lull in the conversation. I didn't know what else to say.
Well, doesn't it sound like you love her very much?
No, I guess it doesn't, does it?
I think ye should only wed when a lad and lass want to stay together fiercely. And getting married is the only way ye can do it that's respectable.
You're marvelous.
Am I new?
She grabs the basket and walks off.
Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Why are you so angry with me?
I'm not. I like you very much. I just didn't understand a word you say.
She walks away with a smaller basket.
Where are you going?
To gather some heather for the wedding.
Oh, I see. And where does one do that?
On the hill. Where the heather is.
May I go with you?
I'll do it much faster alone.
He sings.
Can't we two go walking together?
She stops and turns.
Out beyond the valley of trees. Out where there's a hillside of heather. Curtsying gently in the breeze. That's what I'd like to do. See the heather, but with you. The mist of May is in the gloaming.
He approaches.
And all the clouds are holding still.
She watches uncertainly.
So take my hand and let's go roaming through the heather on the hill. Blinking yonder, there's lazy music in the rill, and all I want to do is wander through the heather on the hill. There may be other days as rich and rare, there may be other springs as full and fair, but they won't be the same. They'll come and go, for this I know, that when the mist is in the gloaming, and all the clouds are holding still,
he holds the basket.
If you're not there, I won't go roaming through the heather on the hill.
She softens. She smiles. And soon after, they run on a path along a ridge, then down among trees and bushes in sunshine and light breezes. They stop, holding hands.
The mist of May is in the gloaming, and all the clouds are holding still. So take my hand and let's go roaming through the heather on the hill.
The morning dew is blinking yonder. There's lazy music in the rain. And rare. There may be other springs as full and fair, but they won't be the same. They'll come and go. For this I know, that when the mist is in the gloaming,
They walk on together. Later, in a modest home, Meg bursts in, pulling down laundry hung from beams and piled on furniture as Jeff walks in. She keeps tidying the place while Jeff looks at a cot.
Excuse me.
She closes the door and clears a couple more things. He stops her.
Where are we?
In me father's bothy, where the cowboys rest at night.
Where the cowboys rest at night.
She wrings a rag in a basin.
In a braw brick moon McNeek, I assume.
Hey, you poor lad, you got the heat of the sun upon your bunny brow.
She dabs his forehead.
Where are we?
Well, he said you wanted a place to lay doon.
And this was the nearest one?
No, not the nearest. But the most convenient.
I see. Well, I'll tell you, Lash. Driving all night and a good health to Charlie, that can sure take it out of you.
He sits on the cot.
What's this, foam rock?
She puts his legs up and takes off his shoes.
Oh, handsome lad.
You got no idea how bro I can be after 8 hours sleep.
Why, you're not tired.
All I want to do, Lass, is take my dram and my sup and put them to bed.
But I thought...
Good night, dear.
He lies back.
Oh. Oh.
Look at you lying there and I get wee tadpoles jumping up and down on my spine.
I'll thank you to take your repulsive metaphors and go.
But I've been waiting so long.
She stands.
Go.
Ah, you men are all alike. You get what you want from a laugh and just farewell.
Get what I want?
Why?
I can't even get you to go away.
You're a cruel, heartless man, and you misled me.
I misled you?
Aye.
You dragged me through every thistle for 10 acres.
Well, you said you wanted a place to lay doon, and I said clear that I was unmarried.
He looks at her.
Is it going up to it gradual? Honey, why should you think I had anything like that in mind?
Because you're a lad and I'm a lass.
Well, with that philosophy, you must have had a very provocative career.
She grins.
Aye. And my father before me.
She sits again, back turned to him.
He and me mother met in this bothy. He was a shepherd.
She rubs his foot.
And poor company it is spending your days with the sheep. And she... She was a gypsy. And one day she was walking past, and she saw my father lying on this very cot, sleeping like an angel. She was pretty tired herself, so she come in. She propped a chair under the latch to keep the wind out, you know. And then she took off her shoes. And she sat in yon chair, just rocking and rocking, waiting for me father to wake up. Aye. And it wasn't long after that that I was born.
She turns back to find Jeff asleep.
Laddie?
She takes off his other shoe and sets it down on the straw-covered floor. Then she takes off her own shoes. Setting them by Jeff's shoe, she puts Jeff's other shoe in the line at the foot of the cot. She stands and steps to the chair where she sits down and rocks, watching Jeff sleep.
Rest ye well, laddie. You'll need it.
In the McLaren house.
Charles.
Signing a large book.
MacPherson.
Watched by Andrew.
Darren. As fair a hand as ever signed a family Bible. Ah, Charlie.
Charlie looks out a window, then follows Andrew to the next room.
Where's Jean? Never forget, lad, to put your foot down in stunt or after your win. Take her stand firm, so she'll know for certain who wears the kilt in the house.
Aye, sir. Did you say what a Jean was?
You know, we had no more than finished the wedding dance when I said to my wife, "Woman, fetch me a pot of liquor from yon table."
Did she do it?
No, but I had established the principle.
Did she go out?
Who?
Jeannie.
Of course not. Now mind you, lad, always remember, a woman is like a bagpipe. Why, you ask?
Oh, why?
Because if you tuck her under your arm and you squeeze her, ugh, she'll play a merry tune. But you'll man remember, she'll drone on long after you're out of breath yourself.
Is she in the house?
Who?
Jeannie.
Hey, lad. She's above stairs.
He hurries that way. It stops.
You cannot see her before the wedding. It brings bad luck.
Well, sir, can I speak to her then?
You must suit yourself.
Jeannie?
Andrew leaves.
Darling?
On the other side of her door.
Yeah, wait, Charlie. You cannot see me.
But Jeannie, darling, I cannot wait for the wedding.
Charlie, please. Get away.
In her slip, she holds a hand to the door.
Because they've told me I can't be holdy till wedding music start playing. To ease my longing, there's nothing wrong in me standing out here and saying, come to me, man, to me. Just come to me, and to me, kiss me good day. Give me your lips, and don't take them away.
Charlie, please, get away.
Come, dearie, near me, so he can hear. I've got to whisper this softly, for though I'm burning to shout my yearning, the words come tiptoeing off me.
She sways.
Oh, come.
She dances gracefully from the door.
To me, kiss.
She spins around the room, pausing in front of the door. She steps to her bed, where her wedding dress lay. She picks it up and holds it against her, spinning with a broad smile. She spins at the door and before a fireplace. She dances in a waltz back to the bed, still facing the door.
Come, dearie, near me, so ye can hear me. I've got to whisper this softly.
She steps closer.
Though I'm burning to shout my yearning, the words come tiptoeing.
She puts the dress back on the bed.
Oh, come.
And dances balletically to the door again.
Kiss me good.
Placing a kissed hand on the door. She holds the door latch, but stays with her cheek against the door.
Just come to me, bend to me, kiss me good day.
Charlie opens the door downstairs. The house. Later, Tommy and Fiona run back to the house. She shuts a gate between them.
I have to go in and help Jeannie get dressed for the wedding. Oh, Tommy, there's something I have to tell you. I'm 24 years old.
Oh, that's nice.
Yet in a mind.
No.
but it's fearful old for a maid.
No, it's just about right.
Fiona!
She rushes to the house.
Fiona!
She stops, then returns and lets him kiss her. She runs back to the house and goes in. He hurries to watch her through the windows, then turns away.
Hey, Jeff!
He's sitting in the garden.
Jeff! What are you doing?
Laying down.
Laying down.
He jumps a stone fence to him.
A day like this, you should be wide awake, enjoying yourself.
He jumps onto the fence.
Widely held opinion in this town.
He walks along the top.
Say, you know that persistent rumor about Scottish frugality? Well, forget it. They're generous to a fault.
Huh?
Yeah. Now, what about you, Thomas? You didn't get that kind of high on old Lakey's Highland Dew.
Maybe the sun gave me the power. But I could swim Loch Lomond and be home in half an hour. Maybe the air gave me the drive. But I'm all aglow and alive. What a...
He hops down.
Day this has been. What a rare mood I'm in. Why,
he pats Jeff's cheeks.
Almost like being...
steps into the house.
All the music.
Fiona steps out of Jeannie's room onto the landing.
Seems to be like a bell that is ringing for me.
He steps to the bottom of the stairs.
And from the way that I feel when that bell starts to peal, I would swear I was falling.
Starts down the stairs.
When we walked up the brae,
not a word did we say. It was,
she faces him,
almost like being in love. But your arm linked in mine made the world kind of fine.
It was almost like being in love.
All the music of life seems to be
like a bell that is ringing for me. And from the way I feel when that bell starts to peal,
I could swear I was falling.
They embrace.
Fiona!
Jeannie steps out.
I can't get my stays tied.
Fiona laughs and heads back up the stairs.
I'll be waiting for you.
She and Jeannie go back into the room.
Jeff, you know, it's going to take us, well, a couple of hours to blow out that fuel line, right?
Jeff stands by the Bible.
Why don't we stay for the wedding?
Whatever gave you that idea?
They look down at it.
Boy, they didn't steal his Bible out of a hotel room. Married Elizabeth Lang to Andrew McLaren, July 2nd, 1739. I wonder how much an old-timer like this is worth. Children, Fiona, born October 10th, 1742. Jean, born April 8th, 1748.
They step away.
You know, a thing like that, that's older than the Declaration of Independence.
They stop and hurry back to the Bible.
No, that can't be. I read it wrong. Hung over or something.
They read more closely.
Well, Fiona's 24 and Jeannie's...
Now, it's an old family name. It's a coincidence.
I'm sure it's a coincidence, Jeff. Look at this thing. Jeannie's getting married, right? Married Charles McPherson Dalrymple to Jean McLaren, May 24th, 1766.
Charlie?
And the ink isn't dry.
I'll give it time. It's only 200 years.
Jeff, no bicycles, no telephones.
Yeah, and the clothes. And that hyperthyroid milkmaid.
Charlie, talking about miracles.
It can't be. I can't be drinking 200-year-old scotch.
Had to be something wrong. The day was too good to believe.
Tommy, are you there?
Fiona.
Fiona comes back out.
You are staying for the wedding, then?
She goes downstairs.
Fiona. How old did you say you were?
24. And I didn't see why you have to throw it in me face.
No. It's just there has to be some sort of logical explanation. Now, is that your name in the family Bible?
Aye.
You were born in 1742?
Aye.
She looks at them nervously.
Well, there has to be some sort of explanation, Fiona.
I cannot tell.
Well, who can?
Oh, I was hoping that we could have this day together. Now you know, believe the truth, and you'll be going.
Fiona, just what is the truth? I mean, why isn't Brigadoon on the map? What's this miracle Charlie was talking about?
Yeah, and are we invited to your 225th birthday party?
I cannot tell. No one can tell about Brigadoon except Mr. Lundy.
Mr. Lundy?
Who's he?
The Dominie. He's the only one who has the power to tell you about Brigadoon. If you really wish to know, you will have to go with me to see him. I'll take you there now.
Somber, she goes to the door. Glancing at each other, Tommy and Jeff follow her, and they all leave the house. Later, in his home, the Dominie lights a pipe.
Let me warn you. What I'm going to tell you, you'll no believe.
Fiona, Jeff, and Tommy listen.
Well, now, why won't we, Mr. Lundy?
Because what happened in Brigadoon was a miracle. And most people didn't believe in miracles.
Well, that sounds fair enough.
When did this miracle take place, sir?
Well, it happened exactly 200 years ago.
He sits down.
Aye, and that was a fearful time in the Highlands, for we're a plague of witches. And those burnings and hangings and torturing among the folk, from Argyll away to Cameron and Stuart lands.
He puts his pipe aside.
But here in Brigadoon, we had a man who was the minister of the kirk before me. Younger than I. Forsyth. That was his name. Geordie Forsyth. You know, he was a good man.
Aye. The kindest man in all of Scotland.
Aye, because he had the power to heal the wounded spirit of man. To see into the heart and to know the black secrets of all humankind. And yet to love them. And he loved the folk of Brigadoon.
He leans forward.
But strange men rode into the village from Dunfermline. Men of arms, with pikes and claymores. And they seized Mr. Forsyth and charged him with witchcraft and threw him into the Tolbooth prison in Edinburgh.
Oh, poor loving man.
And in the dungeon, chained to the wall, he grieved for his tune of Brigadoon. And he thought of all the evils the outside world could bring when he was gone. All the accusations of witchery, the hanging, the neighbor turning against neighbor. And that night, he prayed to God for a miracle. He prayed to God to make Brigadoon and all the people in it vanish into the Highland mists. Vanish. Aye, but no forever. Every 100 years, all could return for one day. They could live their ordinary lives, go to sleep at night, and when they woke, 'twould be 100 years later. For Mr. Forsyth believed that in this way, there could be no change in the lives of the people, because there wouldn't be long enough in any century to be touched by it.
You mean that And when you people go to bed and then you wake up and it's 100 years later?
Aye, it was Charlie Dalrymple brought Mr. Forsyth's words from Edinburgh. Well...
He sits back.
The miracle took place on the day they hanged him as a wizard.
Let me ask you something, sir. Supposing somebody around here gets a little fed up and wants to leave, what then?
Oh, you can't leave.
Oh, wait a minute, sir. You know, we've got a race. We're due in Dublin.
Oh, a stranger could leave. But according to the word of Mr. Forsyth, if anybody of Brigadoon leaves, the spell's broken for all. And that night, Brigadoon would disappear forever.
Jeff and Tommy glance at each other.
I told you you wouldn't believe the truth.
Well, it does take a pretty special frame of mind, sir. But tell me something else. At night, when you go to sleep, what's it like?
Oh, man. It's like being carried off in shadowy arms. But sometimes, in my sleep, I think I hear strange voices.
Voices?
Voices filled with fearful longing. And I think I'm hearing the outside world drowning. Drowning in its centuries.
He stares gravely into space. Somewhere, a man in Highland regalia carries a torch. Another stands beside him holding a shield. Another pair with torch and shield stand somber. Another man with a torch stands with another man with a shield. Andrew McLaren stands with another man who holds a torch. All of them are in a stone amphitheater.
Gathered are the clans of Brigadoon to stand witness to the wedding of Charles MacPherson Dalrymple and Jean, the daughter of Andrew McLaren.
With Fiona standing nearby, Lundy turns to Charlie and Jeanie, who approach him.
Do ye twain promise to cleave ye each to the other in love and obedience to the laws of God and man so long as ye both shall live? Charles Dalrymple?
I do.
And Jean of McLaren's?
I do.
She smiles through her veil.
Then, in the sight of God, and before the memory of George Forsyth, who brought the miracle to Brigadoon, I do declare ye man and wife. And may ye both be good and true to each other.
Lundy steps away. And Harry arrives at the top of the amphitheater, watching Charlie step in front of Jeanie and lift her veil. Harry stares as Jeanie gazes at Charlie, and they kiss. Harry runs off. Charlie and Jeanie hold hands, and townspeople gather around them, beginning the celebration with tankards all around. Tommy stands with Fiona. A smiling older woman walks to a table where other revelers get their tankards. On the amphitheater steps, Jeff lounges with Meg.
There, laddie. Now you must drink your tankard dry and wish happiness to Jeanie and many bears.
He has an arm around her.
You know, bonnie wee bear.
She makes a rocking motion.
Well, you don't mind if I drink it one burn at a time, do you?
He drinks.
Hey, and when they start to pipe and will you not dance a fling?
Honey, my fling is flung.
She laughs heartily.
Why, when you people have a wedding, you really bust loose, don't you?
Look, laddie, this is solemn as a Sunday in the kirk compared to some.
Now, if you think this wedding day went just a bit amiss, then I will tell you about a wedding far more daft than this. The lad involved turned out to be no other but my pa, and by the strangest bit of luck, the woman was my ma.
She stands.
McGregor, McKenna, McGowan, McGraw, McMitty, McNeil, and McRae. Aye, all of the folk in the village were there at my mother's wedding day. For Pa had asked his friend McMee, and Mac had come with Bay McGee, and they invited 93 to my mother's wedding day. Then up the road came Ed Mateen with half the town of Aberdeen.
Aye, everyone was on the scene at their mother's wedding day.
Then all of a sudden the liquor was gone, the gin and the whiskey and all. And all of a sudden the wedding affair had become a bunny brawl. For Pete McGraw and Joe McVie began to fight for May McGee, while May McGee and Sam McGee were a-wooing in the hall. So cold and stiff was John McVie, they used him for a servant tray.
But soon the room began to sing.
Meg whispers something in Jeff's ear.
The people were lying all over the room, looking as if they were dead. Then Mother uncovered the minister quick, and she told him, go ahead.
She jigs.
Then Paul kneeled down on Bill McRae, and Mother kneeled on Jock McKay. The preacher stood on John McVie, and that's how my ma was wed. It was a sight beyond compare, I ought to know, for I was there.
There never was a day as rare as a mother's wedding day.
She falls into Jeff's arms. Lundy raises his hands for quiet, and everyone obeys. He turns to Charlie and Jeannie, who stand apart, facing each other. Each steps closer. Then they step to opposite sides, and methodically step around each other. Facing again. They take each other's hands. A few other couples dance onto the floor around them, skipping quickly back and forth. They jig, hopping from foot to foot. They spin. In a circle, they jig and spin around the bride and groom, who dance more sedately. The other dancers form couples again, dancing energetically around Charlie and Jeannie, who step slowly around each other. As the couples dance, the men lift the women. Couple by couple, they dance by Charlie and Jeannie with their arms passing over them. The bride and groom spot something and hurry that way. Standing with two swords is Harry, who leaps to a lower level to face the couple. Charlie runs ahead of Jeannie into the side.
"'Tis the right of the clan beaten to dance with swords at the wedding, to show that part of the man."
As Jeannie watches, Harry lays the swords in a cross on the ground. In his formal kilt and tartans, Harry jigs, hopping and turning around the swords. Fists on hips, he jigs between the swords, his gaze fixed on Jeannie, who stands between Charlie and Andrew. Spinning away, he leaps high with his legs apart. He jigs around the swords again, and jigs high with his arms up, and leaps into splits again. He jigs around the swords, still staring at Jeannie. Then throws up his arms again. Then one at a time, he hops between the blades again. His pointed toes keep missing the swords. As he holds his arms high and stares at Jeannie. Bending on one knee, he steps over the swords, leaping and spinning. He does it again, landing on the knee, then does it once more. Then he leaps down to Jeannie. Charles confronts him but is shoved away. Harry puts an arm around her and stops Andrew from striking him with a cane. They struggle. And Harry gets the cane away, throwing it. He pulls Ginny to him, and they kiss.
Ginny. All I've done is to want you. Too much.
Distraught, he steps away, then runs through the crowd to the top of the amphitheater, where he turns back.
I'm leaving Brigadoon! This is the end of all of us! The miracle is over!
He runs, and the men of the town run after him. In a shadowy part of the forest, Harry runs to a fallen tree and stops. He runs away, but is blocked by the start of a natural bridge. Running to the end of it, he crouches to hide as two men with torches stalk over the bridge. He runs out to watch them go, then hides again when another torchbearer heads across. Harry scurries to some trees and hides there, as that torchbearer runs down to his level, swinging the torch to signal. Others arrive and gather around him with their torches. The leader directs them to spread out, and they do in all directions as Harry watches from hiding. He crawls out and runs across the area, leaping with a spin. Then leaps high again. When more hunters approach, he runs away, and they leap after him. Harry jumps and spins to another part of the bridge, where he hides as another hunter runs by from behind, missing him. Harry runs out, and with a massive leap, lands crouching, and rolls into another hiding place as another torchbearer searches for him. When the coast is clear, Harry comes out and slides over a ramp of the bridge. He runs across a clearing to part of the bridge and tries to climb onto it, but fails. He runs the other way, and around a tree, as Tommy arrives with a lantern and Jeff behind him. Harry climbs up a larger tree. A couple hunters find him, and one climbs after him. But Harry swings at him and knocks him off the tree into the other hunter's arms, helping Harry swing down and get away. But a torchbearer spots him. Starting to tire, he runs onto the bridge, dodging a lunging man. But he stops when someone else comes the other way. He leaps over another man, then kicks him down, and jumps off the bridge into a crowd of torchbearers, knocking them everywhere. Harry picks up a torch and holds it out at them, swinging it. He's able to back away, then runs off and leaps off a ridge. Tommy, Jeff, and the others run to the ridge and crouch, looking way down. Later, in the amphitheater, the exhausted men walk through and away, assisted by the women. Fiona waits and finds Andrew.
Father.
It's all right, Noah.
Well, they found poor Harry. He'll no leave Brigadoon.
No, he'll never leave Brigadoon. The miracle is safe.
But Tommy, he hasn't come back.
The American?
Aye, he ran after. Did you not see him?
No, but it's near the end of the day, lass. Likely he's off on his journey.
He walks away, and Fiona turns to see Tommy arrive, downcast.
Oh, Tommy!
She approaches him.
I thought you'd gone.
No, I didn't go, Fiona.
Oh, I'd have died if anything had happened to you. I love you so.
You can be so sure after one day.
Aye. I'm sure of my feelings.
I wish I were.
Oh, Tommy. Tis not what you know. Tis what you feel. Can you not tell me that?
This is hard to say. But as I wandered through the Lee, I felt for just a fleeting moment that I suddenly was free of being lonely. And I closed my eyes.
and saw the very reason why. I saw a man with his head bowed low. His heart had no place to go. I looked and I thought to myself, with a sigh there, but for you, though I saw a man walking by the sea, alone with the tide was he. I looked and I thought, as I watched him go by, but for you, go I. Lonely men around me, trying not to cry, till the day you found me, there among them, was I. I saw a man who had never known a love that was all his own. I thought as I thanked all the stars in the sky, but for you.
She holds him.
I've got to find Mr. Lundy and tell him that you're going to stay with me in Brigadoon.
She runs off.
Fiona!
But she's gone. And Tommy turns the other way, staring. Night has reached the town. Over the stone bridge, men carry Harry's body on a stretcher. An older man trails behind, walking past Jeff, who watches an older woman follow him. Then Tommy walks over the bridge, and Jeff spots him.
Tommy.
He stops and turns.
It's all set.
What?
The car.
Tommy looks down with his hands in his pockets.
I went up the road. I tried the starter. It works. The dirt in the fuel liner must have settled. What happened, Tom?
I'm in love with her, Jeff.
Oh.
And I want to be with her.
Yeah, but she's not going to leave here, not after that.
I know.
Tommy, in this town, it's a long time between breakfasts.
Jeff, I know how I feel. I just don't know what to do about it.
Well, I can't tell you what to do, but Tommy, you can't stay here. You know, you can't bury yourself like a raisin in a box of Lorna Doones.
I love her.
I know that. I know, but you were in love with that soap girl. And how long did that last before you started to eat yourself up wondering?
No, it's not the same, Jeff. Not the same.
Tommy, if you wake up tomorrow and you have a few doubts, it's going to be a little late. It's going to be 100 years too late. Now, how can you be sure you're not going to miss your family? How can you be sure you're not going to miss a couple of buddies of yours?
He looks at him.
How can you be sure you're not going to miss the whole world that you live in and belong to? How can you know that?
You're not making it too easy, are you?
I'm not trying to. Tommy, you're a friend. You haven't had any sleep for 48 hours. We're both punchy, and this is... it's some kind of crazy dream. And here I am, I'm talking as if I believe in it, and I don't. And neither do you.
Yeah, but I want to.
But that's not enough. And you know it.
Tommy! Tommy!
Fiona comes from over the bridge.
I'm going to go nurse the engine. I'll be waiting for you.
Jeff leaves over the bridge, going past Lundy.
What did he mean by that?
Fiona tells me you wish to stay, lad. You know what that means.
Fiona, I can't stay. And it's not because I don't love you. I think I do. It's just that I don't trust my own feelings. Do you understand?
She shakes her head.
Not for long, and neither will I.
You and the world we knew will glow till my life is through. For you're part of me from this day. Love, it's you I'll be dreaming of. For you're all I'll see from this day on. These hurried hours were all the life we could share. Still I will go with not a tear, just a prayer.
She steps into his arms.
When we are far apart, you'll find something from your heart has gone with me.
Hey, useless. It doesn't believe in the miracle.
Fiona, to stay, I had to have no fears and no doubts.
Come, lass. It's near the dawn.
Lundy walks away.
Oh, didn't feel badly, Tommy. I'll not be lonely. I think that real loneliness is not being in love in vain, but not being in love at all.
She fights back tears.
Goodbye, Tom. Until I forget that I love you.
She walks away without looking back.
I love you.
He watches her go. Tommy stands alone as Brigadoon grows darker and darker. Sometime later, Jeff sits at a bar in a tuxedo. With a cigarette in one hand, his other hand unsteadily reaches for a glass of liquor. Beyond the bar, a man in a short red jacket is clearing a table, setting a chair upside down on it. He steps over to Jeff and reaches for another glass.
Frank.
He lowers it and Jeff lifts his.
What is this, natural gas?
The usual. Bourbon.
Frank steps behind the bar.
The usual? What have I been drinking along?
Ever since you got back to New York about 4 months ago.
Well, I just decided I don't like it. Give me some gin.
He takes his glass and starts to get it.
What do you have with it?
A little bourbon. I put it on my bill.
Mr. Douglas.
Frank leans on the bar.
Your bill's getting pretty high.
So am I. Frank, have you seen him recently?
Mr. Albright?
He nods.
He hasn't been in here for a month.
He said to me, he said, Jeff, I'll meet you at Frank's bar at 6 o'clock. That was 4 weeks ago. And then he vanished. He vanished like Brigadoon.
Like what?
If I told you, you'd think I was drunk. I'm getting very worried about him, Frank. I think he's lost his sense of equilibrium.
A hand touches Jeff's shoulder.
Jeff.
And Tommy sips beside him, then sits.
Tommy.
How are you?
You're late.
Burb on the rocks, Frank.
Where you been?
Vermont, walking.
He munches on pretzels.
Oh, but that's all uphill.
Yeah, I found that out.
But why didn't you let me know? Do you realize what I've been through?
About a quart a day.
A very inferior liquor. Tommy. Did you get yourself straightened out?
I don't know, Jeff. I thought I could. I guess I can't. Very funny thing, you know, when I'm with people, I'm talking to them. And they're talking to me. I don't hear them. I'm with her.
You must be fascinating company.
Oh, yeah. Fascinating. Come on. To New York.
I drink to that.
They toast.
To New York.
And drink.
Fill them up, Frank, and we'll drink to the five boroughs separately. And then to the suburban counties of Nassau, Suffolk, Putnam. Can't remember the rest. Did you?
What?
Did you tell the soap girl she was all washed up?
Yeah. Called her this morning.
Yeah, but what did she call you? Ah, Tommy, now there's a girl. She's got a shape like a soap bottle and a heart like a soap bubble. She's the brightest wash in the block. I can just picture you two together. Because, you know, she's not like you and I. She's got great.
Tommy doesn't hear Jeff.
And when the mist is in the gloaming and all the clouds are holding still, if you're not there, I won't go roaming through the heather on the hill. The heather on the hill.
Jeff watches Tommy close his eyes.
You go there.
Tommy turns to him.
I think you're right, Jeff. First plane in the morning.
Tommy.
Tommy stands but stops.
Brigadoon, it's not there anymore.
Yeah, I know it's not there, Jeff, but I want to go and see where it was. That girl is so real to me that I got to go and find out for myself that she's really gone. You understand that? Are you coming with me?
Where, to Scotland? Gee, I can't just pick up and go to Scotland. I got too many important things to finish.
He downs the rest of his drink. Sets it on the bar.
I'm finished.
He gets up and leaves with his friend. Later, Tommy hikes through the hills with his jacket over his shoulder, Fiona's voice still in his head. Bare rocky ground. He slows to a stop. He keeps walking. Stops again, and Jeff steps up to meet him.
Well?
Somewhere out there, she's just sleeping.
And when she wakes up, there'll be 100 years between us.
What do we do now, Tommy? We can't stand here in the middle of nowhere forever.
Oh, it's no use, Jeff. Even looking at the empty valley, I still believe in that girl. Why do you have to lose something before you find out what it really means?
All right, take a last look and let's get going.
As Jeff walks back up a hill, Tommy walks further into the valley. Jeff stops and watches. As Tommy slows again and stares down.
Jeff!
What?
Come here!
Jeff hurries down.
Jeff, it's not too late. I'm going.
He runs.
Tommy, come back! There's nothing there! There's nothing there, Tom!
But he runs over the bridge to Lundy.
Oh, Tommy, lad, Tommy, you really love her. You woke me up.
Tommy looks over the bridge.
You shouldn't be surprised, son. When one loves deeply, anything's possible, even miracles.
As they finish crossing the bridge, Tommy keeps staring at Fiona running to her gate. She steps through it as Tommy steps toward her. He caresses her face, and they kiss. This described version of Brigadoon was produced for Movies for the Blind. Robert Goulet is Tommy. Peter Falk is Jeff. Sally Ann Howes is Fiona. Marilyn Mason is Meg. Edward Villella is Harry Beaton. Finley Curry is Mr. Lundy. Thomas Carlyle is Charlie Dalrymple. Linda Howe is Jeannie McLaren. Reese Williams is Andrew McLaren. Ray Kellogg is Frank. Music supervised, arranged, and conducted by Erwin Kostel. Musical numbers choreographed by Peter Gennaro. Art director, Jan Scott. Costumes designed by Bob Mackey. Chase dance sequence directed by Sam Gary. Technical director, A.J. Cunningham. Audio, Ray Kemper. Videotape editor, James E. Brady. Choral direction, George Wilkins. Associate producer, James Lauren. This has been a Rogo production, a presentation of the ABC Television Network.